for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Indeed it is. It's time to talk. Me, I can't press buttons today. There you go. A lovely warm welcome. It should be Bob, but it's me today. We swapped yesterday, so it's all very confusing. Delighted so far in the studio today. We have Wayne Banks, we have Sam, and we have Anne Naylor and Jan Pound. I'm going to introduce them all individually, but I'm going to start with you, Wayne. Wayne, you, what does time to talk mean to you today? What is it all about? Can you sum it up for us?
Sure. Well, time to change. I've been running a campaign for about 7 years now to get people talking about mental health and the stigma and discrimination that often goes with it. Today is the first National Time to Talk Day. And it's all about starting conversations, with people that you think may have mental health problems or maybe a bit down, maybe just starting a conversation with your boss, with anyone that you meet in the street, just to get the public aware of mental health problems.
Absolutely. We're going to come back to that and talk a great deal about that. Let me introduce Councillor Anne Naylor. You're an Essex County Councillor and you're Chair of the Wellbeing Board and a nominated mental health champion. What is a mental health champion?
I am. Part of my responsibility as a portfolio holder for health and wellbeing is to look after people with mental health conditions from conception till death. It's a lifelong issue, and that's really my interest.
How does Essex County Council support people with mental health problems?
Well, we have targeted support for children and young people in what's called CAMS, Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, and then we have adult services, and then we have old age services. So it's all the way through life again.
It's a massive subject, isn't it?
It is.
And I'm sure that there are many people living in Essex.
At least one in four of the population will have a mental health issue at some point in their life.
Okay. I'd like to also introduce Councillor Jan Pound, Brentwood Borough Councillor, Chair of Health and Community Boards and nominated Mental Health Champion as well. You're going to have to lean forward a little bit to the microphone. Jan, what is Brentwood's input on this situation?
Well, I think at the moment I've been on this very sharp learning curve. I started off not really quite understanding where. I mean, obviously health comes under the remit of Essex County Council. So what could we in Brentwood do? But having gone along and spent a fair amount of time with Wayne, and I've been to many of these meetings, I'm beginning to understand that what I see my role as is more of a catalyst. It's more of understanding what the problems are, understanding what we have available, putting the whole thing together. So it isn't necessarily a finance thing, although that may come on, but at the moment it's bringing it all together and understanding what the need is.
Okay, lovely. And we've just been joined. Just walked into the studio. He is Basildon District Councillor. He's a nominated mental health champion. And you are lead officer for the South Essex Recovery College, correct?
Yes, I'm
I've got that right. Yeah. So what sort of courses does the Recovery College offer?
Oh, well, we're very early development. Recovery colleges are a new concept in mental health. They're very much focusing on, well, let's go back a step. Mental health services can sometimes work to contain an illness. That's something that mental health services do very well. And that's that's just how they operate. But what's lacking in mental health care is the need to empowering the individual to give them self-management tools so they can take back control of their life. And that, in essence, what the Recovery College is. It's providing people with lived experience of mental health conditions the opportunity to take back control of their life through the mediums of coaching and mentoring. So I'll be developing four courses, Introduction to Recovery, Taking Back Control, Telling Your Story, and Pursuing Your Dreams and Ambitions. It's something I'm very passionate about and been involved in for about a year now.
Okay, Sam is with us in the studio.
Sarah.
So what are you doing? I've written Sarah, then I crossed it out and wrote Sam, because you called her Sam.
Okay. I have got
Sarah. I'm going to write Sarah in big letters. Sarah, tell us your story. How have you come to be here today?
4 years ago, 23, 24, I hadn't really had any past experience. With hindsight, I guess I did have some experience of mental health, but essentially I had a complete mental breakdown. I didn't have any help, I didn't have any support. I had a career, I had friends, social groups, everything pretty much just disappeared overnight for me. Since then, I've had to pretty much fight for everything I've got with regards to support from GPs, counselling groups, any sort of service that's available, stuck on waiting lists. I've only just moved to Essex actually recently, and obviously then had to deal with the whole transition period for going from Hampshire, which provides one lot of services, to Essex, which provides another. And as a result, face a lot of closed doors. So I'm doing a lot of campaigning now to improve services across the country and make it a bit more linear.
Do you think that the service in the county or in the district are not good enough, or are they good? Or
I think there's a lot of work to be done, to put it diplomatically. My experience is absolutely appalling. From GP upwards. I've got a lot of complaints processes going
through. What, in Hampshire or when you came to Essex?
No, this is in Essex. Right. A lot of complaint processes and trying to get them to implement change and training. Because I don't want a sorry. I want to know that, I mean, I'm, you know, brave enough to say, this isn't right, how are you going to fix it? Other people aren't as fortunate. So I want to make sure that things are changed for the better.
Okay, can I bring in Anne here? What would you say, that when she said that the services are found appalling?
I think we have a rightly challenging young person here who really wants to develop a normal life, and she feels that she's been denied that at present. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had bipolar for a number of years. There's so much self-management I do, and I'm wearing my own business, so I'm asking for not much compared to some people. So
no, so it's very hard. But when you have an articulate person who knows what they want and thinks that they should get it, it's really very difficult. And always, sometimes matching the service to the individual can be quite tricky. And it takes a bit of time. And as you're finding that it is taking time.
Well, I'm on a 2-year waiting list currently. There was a 2.5-year one in Hampshire, which just isn't really...
And you're talking about the National Health waiting
NHS.
List.
That's NHS. And if I go to anything private, which
waiting
is the same...
for?
Counselling services, which is what they've suggested. But if you go to approach any other private health, I don't know if the college would be applicable to this as well, but if you then go off your own back and go for private care, you're then bumped off any list or waiting list and refused help.
Your condition is very hard to diagnose in the first place, isn't it? I mean, and it could
yeah.
be... And it, there's variance, isn't there? There's personality disorders and bipolar. They're all of an ilk, are they not? Or am I being ignorant there?
There is. I mean, everyone has their own experience of personality disorder, or for my experience, bipolar. I'm quite fortunate that I've done a lot of work on myself and self-management, so I know how it works for me. And I know I've spoken to a lot of people, even just today, that have got a really strong understanding. And I just think... across the board, I think with patients to GPs or GPs to then counselling services or even counsellors and MPs, there's no communication, there's no streamlined way of everyone communicating what they want and everyone happy as a result. It just, there's no one joining the dots together.
Okay, Wayne, you've been diagnosed with the same problems. How have you felt your treatment has been over the time that you've discussed your problems?
I was lucky enough to be diagnosed within 6 months of having my first episode, which was about 6 years ago.
And how did that present? Was that a depression or was that...
I have mixed episodes, so I get both at the
okay.
same time.
Highs and lows.
I can have high... how do you explain it? A lot of energy, a lot of... not aggression, but a lot of...
frustration.
Yes, frustration is probably the word. But I also have lots of negative thoughts at the same time, which means that the risk for suicide for me is quite high compared to most people. With highs, I don't really have a major problem with the highs. I don't know when they're coming, I don't notice them. But my highs are classified as hypermanic, so I only rise to a certain level. And I can sort of become very active and very... I spend a lot of money, which isn't very
good. Oh, I do
good.
That.
Yeah, not like this. But depression is probably my major problem. It's something that's affected me over the last 3 years more than anything else. I do have rapid cycling, so it means my episodes are more than 4 a year. But depression is the long-lasting stuff, and it's depression that lasts for months rather than a few days.
Okay, right. Break for 2 seconds and then back. I'll talk a lot more about it. Today it's time to talk, and we're talking all about mental health awareness. We've just heard from Wayne and Sarah all about their various problems. Sarah's obviously quite frustrated about the service she's got. Jan, are you new to as a mental health champion, or is this something you've always had some sort of interest in?
No, I in fact knew very little about it, which is, as we've been discussing over lunch today, has been it's been absolutely terrific for me, because I have begun to understand, and I think really in my role on the Health and Communities panel, that it's necessary to understand, because you meet with so many different people in so many different environments, and you're able then to think, yes, that fits in with what whoever was saying where, and feel that then we can we can have some sort of improvement in what we're offering.
We surely have improved. I mean, if we go back 130 years, then anybody presenting any sort of mental health problem, you know, would have been locked up in Worley. So we're past those days now, aren't we? We have moved forward. We have put people with mental illnesses into the community, and I'm talking about serious mental illnesses, you know, where they could be a danger to themselves or to others. They are in some cases out in the community. So we have made tremendous changes forward, but we have got a young lady here who feels that her service or her treatment so far has been lacking. Fair comment, or do you think Essex has got a lot more to do?
No, it's fair comment. Any individual comment is always fair comment, so I always respect that and listen. But it is a big challenge. As you say, there's been so much change. You know, you're talking about 150 years ago. Even if you talk about 20 years ago, the changes are dramatic. The therapeutic drugs that can be used nowadays are much better. So people have got a better chance of leading a normalised life. And, you know, they want to be just like you and I. And if we look around us in our workplace, in any social activity, we can see people who've got mental health issues and who are managing to lead a normalised life. And that's what everyone wants. They want to be in the community. It's like any other disability. Somebody's got cerebral palsy. They want to be in the normal community. They don't want to be locked away. They want to be of the community, in the community, and part of the community, contributing to the community and having a good life.
And treated as everybody else is. As
treated with respect.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I've not completely forgot my question now. I know what it was. Eric Pickles was supposed to be in the studio with us today, but he's obviously taken up with the dreadful storms with Cobra.
Oh, yes, he's in
today. He just threw me. He came up on the screen.
Sure, he's with us in spirit, yes.
I'm sure he is. Andrew, so what would you say to what Sarah said?
Well, actually, I have similar experience. I myself have a mental health condition. It's something I'm very, very proud of. In fact, I've come a very, very long way on my own personal mental health journey. At 15, I got admitted to a hospital for a year, a psychiatric hospital. I spent 5 or 6 years in and out of mental health services. I was very, very, very unwell. And my treatment and my the support that I was given in some places, it was absolutely fantastic. And I think that's always important to recognise, that there are staff who are working absolutely fantastically to support individuals. And that's something I'm very, very passionate on, the staff, so that you can come across staff who have their heart in it. But I think sometimes, and I think it does happen quite often, you have experiences that are very, very negative and very, very damaging. And I personally have had those experiences. I've had very good experiences, but I've also had very negative and damaging experiences. And I think from, you know, now seeing it from the other side, from seeing it at the side that now I'm a local councillor, I'm working with the NHS on a project, seeing it from the other side, you really begin to appreciate that there's something bigger that needs to be addressed here. And I think fundamentally, there's still a stigma. There's still a stigma. We all have a mental health. Everyone around here will have a mental health. We'll all feel happy, sad, angry. We all have a mental health.
I hope you have mental well-being, actually. Yes. Rather than mental health. It's the whole concept of the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think that does encapsulate it nicely. But I think we all have one regardless. And I think that's something that services, both local authorities, mental health providers, housing providers, the Job Centre Plus, we all need to work to address mental well-being. And to look at people, treat people as individuals rather than conditions. I think that's the key message that my mantra, if you will.
Do you think we're, ladies, do you think we're overwhelmed as well? You know, our hospitals, because our hospitals are overwhelmed at the moment. I was at Queen's the other day with my mother in A&E. There were 13 ambulances outside waiting to get in. Now, you can make all the plans in the world, but, you know, a busy Monday morning, people misusing the service as well, unfortunately. But are we as a county council, as a Brentwood council, are we getting overwhelmed with people with mental health problems, or have we got the balance right?
Yes, we are getting overwhelmed, but I think we just have to recognise that this is where we are in life and in the cycle of our population. There's a large number of people, I'd say about one in four people will have a mental health condition at some stage in their life. And so we're going to meet a lot of people, and we just have to say this is where we are. It's like saying, you know, there's dementia in the population and it's increasing. We can't turn the clock back. We don't know how to turn the clock back. We don't know how to manage it, so we have to exist with it and give people the best possible life we can. Help them to have a reasonable accommodation, help them to have, get back to work if that's what they want to do, and help them to live a good life.
Let's raise the ugly subject of money. Is there enough? Well, I'm sure the answer is going to be no, but is there enough money put aside at the moment to deal with the situation?
No, there's never enough, but sometimes by reconfiguring services we can make the money go better. Go further and go better. You know, sometimes we're stuck with old-fashioned systems. Now we've got people with personalised budgets. It's a lot easier for them to fund the care that they need, get the support that they need. And I'm disappointed to hear your story that you're not allowed to use private health services. But I will look into that a bit.
Nor can I afford it, I don't think, in the prices.
No. But I work with both the North and South Mental Health Trusts in Essex, and I know them very well, so I can talk to them about some of these issues on your behalf.
But I think, Anne, if I may just follow on from that, I think there is money put into mental health services, but it's looking, as you said, at how that money is spent. Mm-hmm. Is it spent on containing an illness and containing a problem, or is it spent on empowering an individual to give them the self-management tools, which we all have. We all have self-management tools to a degree. And how are we going to go about doing that? There's been progress made with the personalisation agenda. There's been progress made in recovery colleges and peer support, but there's still a way to go. We still need to move from, rather than containing an illness and a problem, to empowering an individual, because it not only transforms someone's lives, but if you look at it quite crudely, it saves money.
The hardest part for me seems to be, and I've got experience with this, somebody quite close to me has got exactly what you've got, and the hardest part for her was, I think, the very initial steps, the step of going to the doctor in the first place, going to see the GP, and then actually the GP referring to consultancy level and specialist level. And, you know, at one time she was very down, and, you know, people around her were very worried about her, and we had to try and get help from outside, and I personally found it very, very difficult to get, you know, what I'd call emergency help.
I think the issue with money is, I've done a lot of research for the campaigning I've been doing, and putting service users at the heart of planning saves the NHS millions. So all these millions that they don't have, it's sitting there waiting, and it's not about making more money available, even though they keep making cuts. It's about distributing it in the right way. And I think you made a really good point about saying, letting the local councils decide what's needed in those areas, although there does need to be a streamlining across the country, because people are moving around all the time. That's just the nature of society. People are always going to move from one end of the country to the other, but having the communication and funding available, especially in like you said, with crisis as well, hospitals, NHS hospitals outsource their beds to the places like the Priory, for example. So I was doing some research on how much it would cost to stay at the Priory for a week, for example. They could probably pay two nurse salaries for that, for the same amount of money that they would use just to give a bed to somebody. That's not factoring in with the Priory. You have to pay for your bed, and then everything else is supplementary. So if you do art therapy, you've got to pay for that. General therapies, medications, your food, that's not generally included. You have to pay for that on top. So all of this mounts up. Whereas if they just said, well, why don't we just put some extra funding or an extra ward, that cuts all that unnecessary spending. And it's just almost like it feels as though somewhere along the way, logic has just not been lost completely. And it just needs a few people to kind of all sit together in a room. So service users, the people providing the services, and the people that are controlling the money, and also look, this is what we want, this is what we need, how are we going to achieve it?
Can I play devil's advocate?
Go on, be my guest.
Do we actually need psychiatric units? I'm just throwing it out there. I don't necessarily advocate that.
I don't know. It's people's image of a psychiatric unit. You know, it's locked cages and, you know, padded cells.
Yeah, exactly.
From my own experiences, when I was first admitted to a psychiatric unit, it wasn't locked cages. Mm. It wasn't needles. It wasn't straitjackets. And that was a mindset that took a very long time.
Exactly, because that's how it's portrayed on television.
And I think one of the things that I found interesting when you mentioned getting help in an emergency, when you mentioned, you know, getting help in a crisis.
Yeah.
Now, bearing in mind I'm a counsellor, I've been picked up by the police a lot of times because when I go into crisis, there's nowhere to go. Mm. And, you know, thankfully, touch wood, I haven't been in crisis for a very, very long time now. But when I did go into crisis when I was younger, the only people to pick me up were the police. And I think if you look at stigma and if you look at, you know, the fundamental problem, if I, you know, God forbid, if I had a heart attack now, an ambulance would come, an ambulance would pick me up, I'd be sent to hospital, I'd be given treatment. If I, God forbid, had a mental health breakdown now, if I went into a psychotic episode, chances are I'd probably be picked up by the police, put in a police cell, and if I'm lucky, given the correct treatment. If you're lucky.
Okay.
And I think the South Essex Partnership Trust, I think they've actually won a pilot to provide mental health nurses in police stations, which is absolutely fantastic. And I think we are talking a lot, you know, about how much the mental health provider has to come. But it is doing some work, especially in regards to recovery colleges and peer support. There's a long way to go, don't get me wrong. But I think the work has to be done. You know, the work has to be done to refocus the attention to giving people the self-management tools. And I'm really, really privileged that I can be involved in that. And I can be leading a development of a recovery college, looking at the recovery college in my own journey. It would have saved me a lot of time and bother. So that is my real drive and passion.
So listening to you talk, you sound like somebody who's actually in control of his condition, and that you say you haven't had an episode for some time now. If you did have one tomorrow, you'd be aware of it and aware that it was happening, and you'd know what to do about it.
This is really interesting, because whilst I have a mental health condition, I know that I have to manage it, because if I don't manage my mental health condition, the consequences are quite dire. The consequences are really devastating. So I probably manage my mental health better than most people.
Yeah.
People with mental health conditions, you'll find probably more mentally healthy than the majority of people, because they have to manage their health. They're forced to manage their health. And that's really, I think that's, for me, has been my saving grace. I've had some fantastic people who have helped me plan for a crisis and have helped empower me, so I'm not stuck in the revolving door. I'm not constantly going into A&E, becoming unwell, and not living a fulfilled and content life. Just because you have a mental health condition does not prevent you from living a fulfilled and content life. And in fact, I think it enables you to do that. For me, my own experiences, I see my experiences as an asset. I wouldn't change the hell I went through for the world, because it's made me, it's transformed me into someone who's mature and can see that everyone has a unique story to tell.
It's incredible, isn't it? You just reminded me the power of your speech there. We had a young man here from Brentwood Mind, from the print place in Brentwood.
Community print.
That's it.
Fantastic.
He came and sat exactly where you are in this studio a year ago, I think, with his father. And he came in very shyly. I thought, he's not going to say a word. And I asked him one question, and it was hard to shut him up because he spoke so eloquently and beautifully. And I said to him, you know, I'm really impressed with what you've done. I never thought I could speak, etc. And, you know, his father said to me afterwards, he wrote to me afterwards, said, you know, like, thank you, because you really boosted the lad's confidence. So that was good. Frustration, would that be your, Wayne, would that be one word you would use when you first became aware of your condition? Was it frustrating?
It was frightening, I think, is the word that I'd use, because I didn't know what was happening. I was lucky enough to be physically manhandled to the doctor, and sat with someone who recognised that I had a mental health problem, although she didn't diagnose it there and then. I was immediately sent over to a psychiatrist, and within 3 months I got a diagnosis. So I was very lucky, but that was via private health insurance. So that's why I got treatment so quickly.
He's had issues for a long, long time, and has been writing songs, but not up to his normal standard. I'm delighted to say he's got a brand new album out coming out very soon. And only last week I was speaking on the phone to, and do you remember this guy? It was once one of the world's biggest stars, Adam Ant. I was talking to Adam Ant, and Adam's had his problems, and he is back, and he's now out touring again, which is a brilliant thing to do. And hopefully, in perhaps in the not too distant future, I could get Adam to come into the studio and talk to us about that. Right, it is Mental Health Week. It's Mental Health Challenge. I'm joined in the studio. Let's start from left to right. I've got Wayne, who here is sort of our coordinator today. He's a Time to Change champion. He also suffers from bipolar. I've got Andy Gordon, who's a Basildon District Councillor. He's a nominated mental health champion and lead officer for the South Essex Recovery College. Councillor Anne Naylor from Essex County Council, also a mental health champion and chair of health and wellbeing. And Jan Pound, who's Brentwood Health Councillor, Brentwood Borough Councillor, not Brentwood Health Councillor, and chair of... She's the lead officer for the Mental Health Challenge. I've got that wrong. You're the chair of Health and Community Board and nominated Mental Health Champion. That's great, right. Now, I'm also hoping to be joined by Andy Bell. We're just trying to get through. He's on his answer machine at the moment. He's the deputy CEO for Mental Health. Andy, let's talk to you first again, and then let's talk about what is Mental Health Challenge.
Well, the way I see the Mental Health Challenge and the way I got involved with it may enlighten you a bit more. I work closely with the local South Essex and Basildon Disability Forum, and they first brought it to my attention. They said, look, Councillor Gordon, there's the Mental Health Challenge. I thought, well, what's this? You know, this looks quite interesting. So I contacted the organisation that's running it, the Centre of Mental Health, Mind Rethink. They're all working together. And I said, this is something I'm really interested in. I myself have got lived experience of mental health conditions. What can I do for my area to further the cause for mental health awareness? So I had a conversation with the guys up there, and they were very, very happy that I was interested. And they said, you know, come and sign up. And I thought, well, I haven't done much. What is there to do? So I went along to an event, a national event, where all the mental health champions were there together. And I'm a mental health champion for the Basildon area. I'm still working with Basildon Council just to formalise everything and make sure that that's running correctly. And it suddenly struck me what it's all about. In this room full of politicians were people who were passionate about mental health, people who had mental health conditions, and people who are just really passionate about it. Just speaking about how important it is to get mental health awareness raised on a local level. So by signing up to the challenge, in my view, it doesn't have to be anything amazing. It doesn't have to be anything resource intensive. It has to be a commitment. It has to be a drive, and it has to be a passion, because we all have a mental health. And organisations will have a mental health as well, which is another concept. You know, how many people in Basildon Council go off with stress, for example? Mm-hmm. I don't have the figures to hand, but these are all points that organisations need to consider as well. And that's really what the Mental Health Challenge is about. It's about raising those points and discussing them and looking at ways to combat them.
I suppose it'd be absolutely fair to say that unless you have a mental health issue yourself or are close to someone, you have no knowledge of what the mental health industry, if that is the word, and that's not the right word, is all about, yeah?
I agree to a point, because as I said earlier, we all have a mental health. Mm. So we all have experience of mental health in some way, shape or form. But in regards to mental health services, you know, before I became unwell, I wouldn't know what a psychiatric hospital looks like. I wouldn't know what a risperidone tablet looks like. You know, I wouldn't know what a care plan was. So people who aren't exposed to the system, yes, will probably not be aware of what's happening in mental health, in the mental health system. But as I said, they will have experience of mental health, and they will be able to make differences in someone's lives. That can simply be just talking to them, which is sort of the thrust of today's Time to Talk event. National event encouraging people to talk about mental and emotional well-being. Okay. That talking can be really powerful.
Okay, Sarah, previously known as Sam. Sarah, I don't know, in your case, were thrown at you? Were you tried on lots of different meds and uppers and downers and lefters and righters or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, it's probably worth saying that I'm not against medication at all, because I think there's a lot of different avenues, a lot of different people need to achieve mental well-being. Mm. So for some people, that's medication. Some people, it's like talking therapy. Some people, it's just getting out and doing stuff. You know, diet and exercise, all these little factors will go into someone's recovery. For me and a lot of people I've spoken to with bipolar have the issue that when you're manic, so basically for people who don't understand bipolar, there's a spectrum of emotion that everyone has. You have good days, bad days, but imagine those bad days, incredible crippling depression to the point of suicide for some people, or suicide attempts in real crisis mode, to hypomania, which is just imagine yourself on sort of 50 cups of coffee and about 20 bags of Haribos and then some for other people, you know, and to that sort of stage. For me, you only ever kind of I only really knew I needed help when I was depressed. So I'd go in and say I need help, I feel horrific, and they'd say, oh, well, you're depressed. And then for bipolar, generally speaking, if you're given antidepressants, it then sends you into a manic phase, which would then exacerbate the condition, and then you're as unwell. But from the doctor's point of view, they say, oh, but you're better now because you're in a good mood. And that's not how bipolar works. So you need to maintain both sides of the spectrum and just kind of close them into a normal living level. So it is quite difficult to diagnose, and it is difficult to get the right balance.
You see, what you're describing to me is exactly what my friend had, going through exactly the same sort of symptoms. And what was concerning for me was our own ignorance, her family around her, who just didn't know what to do. I'm going to take a call in a moment. Let me just quickly play a record and we'll come back, because I want to talk more about that, because I believe Andrew's going to call right now.
The Mental Health Challenge is an exciting new initiative that we and other charities have begun over the last year to really encourage local councils to really promote mental health and well-being in their communities and see the potential that both they and the people who work in them and use them and are involved with them in their communities can really help to both improve the mental well-being of the whole population, but also improve the life chances of people living with a mental health problem. And we're doing that through what we're calling Member Champions for Mental Health, who are our elected members of councils who want to be, if you like, the voice on the council for it and to work with other local leaders to really raise the profile.
What sort of response have you been getting so far?
We've had a terrific response. I mean, it's a new idea, but already we've got 20 councils across the country who are either already involved or taking an interest, and we've got three councils now in Essex who are very heavily interested or already signed up, and I think it's great to see those councils that have taken the first step to really show leadership in this, because they don't have to do it, they don't have to take mental health seriously, but they are, and they can see that if they do, they will improve the quality of life of their citizens.
What about funding? Where do you get your funding? Because this is an awareness campaign, and surely, you know, the money has to be spent. Where is it coming from?
We've had a little bit of money for this from the Department of Health, the government department that's responsible for health policy, and it's only been a small amount just to help us get started. But we're obviously hoping that we can continue this and that it will be funded. I mean, it's something that councils don't have to pay to be involved in. It's something where it's purely about being involved and being part of it. They don't get money for being involved either, but you know, such is life. But it's really just a way of kind of raising the profile and boosting what we do already. To get more people talking about mental health.
Well, we're already in the studio today. I've got a councillor from Essex County Council, I've got a councillor from Brentwood County Council, so already there's two people here who are seriously involved and helping, and of course, and Andrew's here from Basildon County Council as well. It's not County Council anymore, is it? What am I talking about? Yeah, where did I go back? Basildon and Thurrock. Andy, if money no object and pipe dream, where would you want to be a year from now?
Well, ideally, I would like every council in the country to be looking at what it can do to help improve the well-being of its citizens and to improve the life chances of its citizens with mental health problems, that it would have the same level of profile as physical health in the way the NHS allocates its resources, and that people with living with a mental illness get the opportunities that they deserve to recover the lives that they want to lead. And we won't achieve all that in a year, but we can begin to make the changes that will make that possible.
Andrew, thank you very much for taking the time to come on the programmes today.
Thank
a pleasure
you.
Talking to you. Thank you, my friend. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That was Andrew Bell, who is the Deputy CEO of the Centre for Mental Health, and obviously talked about there about councils coming on board. You certainly have come on board. I wanted to talk about first support as well. For what is there for, in Essex and Brentwood for families, people who don't know what's happening to their loved ones? Is there any support for them?
There's a certain amount of support from voluntary organisations, but we hope gradually to build up more support for carers so that they do get some support. But this is another complicated area. I mean, there's loads we'd like to do, and it's a great ambition to think that we'll get it funded in the same way as physical health. But we never are going to achieve that, because we'll always be subject to what's called a joint strategic needs assessment. And we nowadays have to look at things and say, what are the demonstrated needs? And we have to meet those needs. So we have to meet the needs in mental health as well as the needs in physical health. So we're always going to have to be balancing the act. And the fact is, it's more expensive to deliver physical health things because it's got things like scanners and operations and, you know, very, very expensive drugs. Whereas a lot of the drugs used in mental health are not as expensive as all that, and they don't need as much investment to set up the services. What we're trying to do is to work towards delivering much more of the service in the community, and I think that will give people a better quality of life. But key to that is getting their carers and their families to understand what's going on and to be partners and to want this to happen.
Jan, what do you think would you like to see happen physically or practically in Brentwood in a year's time? That, I'm talking about the areas that we've discussed this morning. What do you think could be done in a practical way to help people who come to you know, first time people when they become ill?
Yes, I think as we've talked before about signposting, I mean, I think it's really important that we can actually set up some kind of broader network where people can be signposted to get the help where they're going to need it. I mean, that could be us working with doctor surgeries to make sure that doctor surgeries have leaflets, information, posters, etc. And I think that what seems to be very lacking is there are lots of organisations out there who are there and able to help people, but people don't know that they're there and they don't know how to access them. And I think that this is a role that we could have in using our powers to actually arrange this sort of signposting so that people are more aware. I think the great problem that we've got is that there isn't really awareness or understanding of mental health. I think we all know people who've broken a leg or have got diabetes, and we all know what happens to those kind of people, and there's a set path that you go along. I think for many of us, we've had no awareness of mental health issues. We don't understand it. And this is what I found myself, is that I've got a far greater understanding from talking to people, and I think we need to raise that awareness. And we need to put it on a par with physical health and to say that somebody with a mental health issue should know that this is their first port of call, this is what they do next, these are the organisations that can help them, and we should be pushing them in the right direction.
So, Sarah, I wanted to just come back to you again. It sounds like a rude question, but it's not meant rudely. What have you done to help yourself? Do you understand what I mean by that?
No, I completely understand. For me, it was quite a long process, and it's accepting that bipolar has and always will be part of my life, and there's no point fighting that and treating it as this separate entity that's just going to exist on par with my life. It's there. It's no different than my hair colour and my eye colour. It's just part of it. So I manage my time effectively. I don't try and commit to too much or too little, just because I understand what my own personal triggers are. So I know that if I do too much and then as a result, my physical health would deteriorate. That's something not a lot of people acknowledge, that there is a quite strong tie between physical health and mental health, and your energy levels and the actual output. So, I mean, at some point I could say, right, well, I can do 3 hours of work today, or I could go out and do all the shopping and run all my errands. That's the choice I need to make every single day, at which I value more. So it might be that the fridge is empty, but I've got my work done for the day. Or I can choose to go out and do other things, but then my mental health would deteriorate and then I'll end up in a worse position for it. So I think that's quite important, understanding my own condition, how things work, what I can do when things get really bad, or if I'm anxious, how I can help myself. And I have my own techniques, and it's finding what works for you. But I just want to come back to everyone that you said about physical health is always going to have essentially more money than mental health. And I think that that's the mindset we need to change. And I know that that's probably a lot of you know, higher up the chain, that's the way everyone looks at it. But I find that quite offensive. It's almost like saying, well, you're not as important because you haven't broke your leg. And I know that's not what you meant by it, but I think all the legislation that's in place that essentially values a broken leg more so than a broken soul, that's quite difficult.
Because you can see a broken leg, you can see someone with cancer, and with somebody with a mental illness, it's not quite so apparent. Andrew, you look very keen to come in
there. You can't put a bandage. I often joke with my friends, I say, if I put a bandage around my head, I'd look crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that really does capture the stigma that mental health has. You know, you can't express it. The only way you can express it is by being unwell. You can't look at someone and say, you've got a mental health condition. In fact, when I came in the room, just looking at everyone, I would say that anyone had a mental health condition. It could be anyone, and that's the whole point. But I think just going back to the point about money and money and resources being bandied about a lot in this discussion, I think there is money in mental health, but it's how that money is used and where that money is going to that is the real thing. That is the real thing that I think mental health providers and local authorities have to get their head around. Is this money going to contain an illness? And I've said it before, and please don't think it, but I said it is my mantra. Is the money invested in mental health going to contain an illness, or is it going to empower an individual so they can take back control of their life? If someone, you know, had diabetes, and every time they had, you know, a problem with it, they had to go in hospital, and they had to spend weeks in hospital, that would cost the NHS millions. Mm. Absolutely millions. But no, they are given the self-management tools so they can manage their condition. Mental health seems to be on a different level at the moment. It seems to be on the level, well, out of sight, out of mind. And I do take the points that were raised earlier that mental health has come an extremely long way. Mm. Even in the time that I've been in hospital, since I've been in hospital, mental health has come a very long way. It's one of those things that's come a long way, but it needs to go further. It needs to look at empowering individuals and allowing individuals to take back control of their life. Because if that doesn't happen, then it's only going to get worse. There's only going to be more money needed to be poured in. There's only going to be more lost souls. And it's beggars belief that mental health is not on par with physical health because it's not cost effective.
Okay. There are some very good organisations out there already. Mind, I know Brentwood, Colin Wade's coming in here later to talk to Brian. He's very heavily involved in Mind in Brentwood. There's Thurrock Mind, I know is a very good organisation. Wayne, did you ever get involved in Mind?
I'm a volunteer there.
You are a volunteer there.
The national and local.
And Sarah, you've worked at Mind.
Yeah, I've done a lot of speeches and work directly with Mind as well. So they're a great organisation. Mm-hmm. And they've got an info line that they fund quite heavily, as much as they can, for anyone to phone up. Carers, friends, family, and say, I've got X problem, how can you help? Or I'm speaking with someone who is suffering from this problem, can you give me a direction in the right area? And obviously it's a national programme, so it can get quite busy, but it's always a resource there, which I'm sure will be on the blog at the end of the day.
Would it be fair to say, though, that when you go to places like Mind, that the best help there is meeting other people with similar conditions to your own and understanding and thinking, hang on a minute, I'm not the only one out there, because I'm sure when you both started, or three of you started your problems, you thought, I'm the only one in the world this is happening to.
I got told I was, I wanted to speak out about mental health because I got fed up of hiding behind this happy face that everyone had assumed was mine. And I was explicitly told by an old manager, never speak about mental health because you will never get a job in this industry ever again. Well, I now run my own successful business, so I don't need to worry about me employing myself. But it's completely true. But I think that doesn't make me want to not talk. That makes me want to talk even more and change things, because that's not right. You shouldn't be able to have to, people shouldn't be hiding in the shadows. People should be talking out, and that's exactly what today's about.
Although I'd say I've been out of work for 2 years now. I'm very passionate to speak out about my mental health problems, and I do put that on my CV now. I was advised to do that by the job centre, actually, because I can't go into every single interview without having a bit of backup. But the attitudes aren't positive anymore. So I'm a perfect candidate until I mention my mental health. I have 2 degrees. I run my business for 15 years.
That sounds a very brave thing to do, to like put that as a headline on the top. I do have a mental health problem.
And I put it as a positive.
Yeah.
Bipolar can actually give you a lot of energy, can give you a lot of creativity. I'm not sure if it is bipolar or it is me, but I think bipolar probably plays a little bit of a part in there. But I still get shut down so many times. I've been the perfect candidate until that's been mentioned so many times now. I got fed up of going to interviews and having to mention it, why I've got a year's gap or 2 years gap now. Now I just turn around and say, right, if you don't want me, then here's what I've got. Mm-hmm. Take me as I am.
They're not allowed to legally discriminate against mental health.
No, but they all
crazy
do.
Ways. I used to work in recruitment. They'll get around it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not cracked down on enough.
It's actually quite interesting hearing both your experiences, and there is a lot of discrimination out there. It's very subtle, but there is out there. And in fact, one of the things that I've found in my experience is actually all the jobs that I've ever got is because I've been open and honest about my mental health condition. The way I look at it is I don't want to work for someone who's not going to give me the support I need when if I become unwell. So it's one of those things that there's a balance, but I think there's numerous benefits to an organisation for employing someone with a disability. I think there's leaps and bounds of benefits in that. There's also some challenges that have to be faced, but I think if you look at the benefits of employing someone with lived experience of mental health condition, they far outweigh the negatives.
Indeed. Jan, you said you're on a learning curve. Today being beneficial for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not only today. I mean, it's been I've been a very short time. Since I became the sort of mental health champion and I started to get involved. And it's wonderful what you're learning, what you're understanding, what the needs are, and a raising an awareness. And very interesting today, you talked about mental health and you talked about prevention within health. I mean, we spend an awful lot of time on physical health prevention, persuading people not to drink too much alcohol, not to be overweight. How do we go about persuading people to protect their mental health? And as you've said today, which I thought was quite key, we all have mental health. We have a physical health and we have a mental health, but we lose that sometimes.
Physical health. People with mental health problems actually have a higher incidence of physical health problems as well. So people with have a higher incidence of diabetes, heart disease,
asthma,
exactly, and as well as alcohol dependency. Yeah. So we should be targeting the mental health people first, because they're the people that but we haven't had that targeting before. So it's about time we had a little bit of it.
I was going to ask you, Anne, because both you and Jan, you've both got titles of chair and health and community boards and wellbeing boards. You must be being pulled in all directions. Everybody, wants their pound of flesh from your department.
Of course. But I think the last point which Wayne brought up, which was one I was going to stress, is this looking after the general health of people with mental health conditions, because it's really important that they do get the screening that they should get, that women go for their breast screening, for their cervical screening, that men go for their male chest checkups, and they don't. A lot of them don't.
You're quite right.
I do think as a result, I don't take care of my general health because, I mean, I do for myself, but I don't trust going to my GP because I know I get told, but you don't look depressed. And when I first had a real severe depressive episode, my GP told me that maybe I just needed a holiday and I was a drama queen. And this is from my GP, so why would I go back there with something really personal like a cervical screening or breast cancer issues
other ways you can get that done.
Sure, but then GP is your first point of call for physical health.
Did you lose faith in the health service at one point?
Absolutely, but then that's why I started campaigning this year, because when I moved from Portsmouth, I was already frustrated there. I moved here, I was messed around for 2 months with transfers and wrong information, and I thought enough is enough, and I was like, well, what? It's not just me doing this, and I've spoken so many other stories of people that don't have the voice to speak up. So I was like, well, I'll do it for you. So I'm trying to speak to Jeremy Hunt directly, who has yet to reply to my emails or letters, but I'm not going to give up, because I'm fighting for, it's as much me as it is everybody else. But
I think you've taken a massive step just coming in here today and talking about it, all the three of you. You know, it's a pleasure to hear you talk. You talk passionately about your illnesses and how you've coped and how things are going for you, and I thank you for that, and I thank you for your honesty as well.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
It's a pleasure. Our two councillors today, I think, have been very honest as well. Well, thank you very much. And hopefully we've raised some part of making aware of what mental awareness is. Absolutely. And there's more to come on Phoenix this afternoon. Brian's got more guests. They're going to be talking about mental health in the elderly and family carers. It is Mental Health Week all day today here on Phoenix. Thank you very much for listening to that part of the programme. If you've missed any of it and want to hear more, then it will be up on our website. You can hear the whole interviews again. And thank you very much for listening, and thank you all for coming in today. I hope you enjoyed. Thank you.